Hi there, Dr. B here with your module 5 and 6 clarifying lectures. I apologize that this week and last week have been rather challenging for me as far as getting a lot of stuff done. There have been a lot of meetings this week, so I know some of you have been having challenges as well, and I apologize for this being so late. General announcements. Reminder that everything is due by Monday at 11:59 for Module 8. Have to have all your work in by 11:59. If you need an extension or anything, please talk to me before the due date. I can't give extensions after the due date. The reason for that is that the registrar requires us to get our stuff in 48 hours after the final exam. So sometimes I'll give 72 hours, so about that Thursday or Friday, everything has to be finished and grades have to be in. So what I'll be doing is that I'll be putting your grades up on Blackboard, and then I'll be putting them in Patriot Web after that. Some of you have let me know that you think the study guide assignment was a dud, and I gotta agree with you. thank you for the feedback. We're going to be doing some serious revisions to it for the next run of this. So thank you for that. So in lieu of that, what I would suggest that you do is you do those science of behavior tutorials. If you're looking for a way to solidify concepts, that's the way to go. And that's why I put them in there. So do those science of behavior tutorials and you should have a solid foundation moving forward. I thought it was interesting that some people were asking for more interaction. The way that these courses are designed, they're supposed to be independent, asynchronous types of courses, but we can certainly put some more interaction in there the next run of this. So I did find it interesting with the behaviorist bio. I've been running this for several years now, and this is the first semester where we've had a lot of problems with the directions. So I'm wondering if some of you may not be using the template to the fullest extent possible, or using the library resources to the fullest extent possible. Don't just use the PDF for your instructions. Use that template. That's what it's there for. Also, remember that there is extra credit available if you decide to do additional peer reviews. And more information about that is in the announcements. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Skinner readings. And as usual, Skinner is not the easiest to understand. And I find the phrase thinking is behaving weakly to be one of the more difficult phrases for students across the board. So what he's actually saying is that thinking is a behavior. You don't have to act upon that behavior, so you don't have to chain the thinking, then the behavior. So that's why it's behaving weakly, because you don't have to act upon it. And then what he's saying about I think, he's calling that a qualifier, or in verbal behavior, we would call that an autoclitic that weakens the assertion. So it's really more that the phrase I think weakens the assertion. So if I say, I think you all should be okay on your final, as opposed to, I know y'all would do great on the final, you'll see that there's a difference there. That's what he's talking about. And the mistake occurs when we assume that our thoughts drive our actions. I'm still seeing this from a lot of people where they're saying, oh, thoughts drive actions, mindset, all those things. Skinner says that that's not how it works. They're collateral behavior. They might be chained. So you might have an environmental trigger that triggers a thought that then triggers a behavior. That's possible, but they're both behaviors, okay? They're both a response to stimuli. So if someone says, oh, he hit you because he got angry, well, unless there's some sort of organic issue going on in their brain, someone's not going to have those types of biological reactions or quote-unquote anger without an environmental trigger. So the SD is something in the environment. And then those thoughts, those feelings, their behavior, as is the overt response. And the reason why saying that he hit because he's angry is because the best we can do is guess other people's thoughts and feelings. That's what makes them explanatory fictions. So I like the way Skinner put it. Why did he act and feel angry? Okay. If you put them together, why did he act and feel angry is really a good way to take a look at it. Also want to talk a little bit about memory. We're going to go into memory in a great deal in 622. But for now, what you need to realize is that you don't have a file cabinet in your head. That remembering is a behavior, and it's subject to the same things that any other behavior is subject to. Antecedents, reinforcement, punishment, all those types of things, they affect our memory. And if you're familiar with false memory syndrome, where a person can be asked to recall an event and certain parts of them will change over time, that's because that memory has been subject to a learning history for that amount of time. So therefore, the memory will change, the behavior will change. And we're going to also be getting into knowing in 622 when you read Johnston's book. But basically, there are different levels of knowing. Some come from rules and verbal governance. Some come from contact with the contingencies. Some responses are verbal. For example, you know, what's the definition of reinforcement? And others require demonstration, which would be using contingencies effectively to increase responding. Another thing to keep in mind is that what Skinner's saying is that science can never be fully objective because the learning history of the scientist is part of the environment. It can't be removed. So whenever I'm doing science, I'm bringing my learning history with me. I can never be completely impartial, nor can anybody else. Freud. Okay, I want to make a really, really important distinction here because some of you had some problems with this one. Remember that Freud is used as a foil and a contrast to Skinner. That Skinner says that we are a product of our history and our genetics. And now we're learning more about epigenetics too, that it's not just our genetics, but the genetics of people who come before us. And what part is nature? What part is nurture? I mean, we'll probably debate that for all eternity because it really wouldn't be ethical to do things like separate twins at birth or anything like that. I know it's been done and it's typically had a very bad result. So we'll never really know for sure what part is nature and what part is nurture. But I do want to talk about the miscarriage piece because I think this part was a little misunderstood. Freud talks about miscarriage as being the reason that it happened was the mom had an inward hatred of the child and therefore the baby died. And any of you who have experienced pregnancy loss and infertility, I need you to know that that is not Skinner's way of looking at this at all, nor do we espouse that as behaviorists. And if you did, I'm sorry for your loss too. What Skinner says is that it's a biological event. Full stop. It has nothing to do with psychology. It has nothing to do with the mother's mindset. Mindset we think is mentalistic. So it really is just, in Skinner's explanation, a biological event. And then somebody had a really interesting question about what altruism would look like in a behavioral paradigm. And could you be completely altruistic in a behavioral paradigm? And the answer is, maybe. Because most likely, altruistic behaviors have been reinforced at some point in your life. So, you know, if you're younger, sharing behaviors, those types of things are reinforced pretty heavily, especially in preschool, right? And then that schedule of reinforcement thins over time to the point where it's almost indiscriminable. So if the schedule of reinforcement is thin in such a way that it's kind of variable, variable interval, variable ratio, you're going to see persistence of behavior. And it might even look like there is no consequence to the behavior, when in fact, there's just enough reinforcement going on to keep that behavior going. So, you know, does that mean that it's selfish that we do, you know, that we do altruistic things for what's in it for us? Well, no, you know, that's not necessarily true, because as we've talked about, these contingencies usually happen outside of our level of consciousness or thinking or anything like that. So there's a reinforcer happening, and most likely we don't even know what it is. So if that helps explain altruistic behavior a little bit more. All right, let's talk a little bit about the study guide. And I wanted to go over some things that are often misunderstood. I will admit that shaping is one of the hardest things to teach online, because you have to do it. You have to experience shaping for you to really get it. So I'm going to give you an analogy and see if it works. Imagine playing a video game. And as you play the video game, and let's say, you know, you're really into this video game, you play it a lot, your behavior starts to change, right? And you become more adept. And the reinforcer is you start to earn points and you move up levels and all that good stuff. But that has to be done through doing. So you have to play the game a lot in order to refine your behavior. That's what shaping is. Yeah, there's cheat books out there usually for most popular games, but you know, you still have to play the game a lot to get how to move up in levels. Another behavior that is often talked about in shaping is driving. You can read all the books you want on driving. And if your parents were like my parents, they talked to you a lot between the ages of 14 and 16 about what they were doing while they were driving. But until you get behind the wheel and you've actually pressed the gas and pressed the brake and done all that stuff, and you know, it takes a while to refine the way that you do that. At first, it's really, you know, you're moving forward, bang, you know, back and forth, even with an automatic transmission. And then let's talk about manual transmissions for a second. It takes a while to refine. That's shaping. And there's a bit of an art to shaping. And it takes practice to really shape behavior well. So when you get to your field work, ask to really work with shaping, because that's something that you really need to practice. Okay, let's talk about chaining. And if you're of a certain age, you're probably thinking about Eddie Van Halen and the song Unchained. I know I am. But I'm talking about the behavioral chains. There's lots of ways that chains work in our life, whether appropriately or inappropriately. For example, if you do a recipe, you have to do it in a certain order, especially if you're baking. If you do things out of order, then typically that recipe is not going to be as good. When you're brushing your teeth, there's a specific way, order in which you do stuff. There may be some variability, but there's typically an order to it. And you can think of things, lots of things that work this way. That's what chains are. But let's talk about inadvertent or inappropriate chains. So a lot of times we'll see individuals with problem behavior, and someone will come up and prompt, like, do you want this? You know, do you, you know, say you want a toy instead? And what you've done is created a chain. So, for example, I had a client a long time ago that they would stand by the refrigerator and cry. And then family member would come up and say, what do you want? And then they'd say juice. So the chain was established that thirsty, go over and cry. Mom will come over, say juice, get juice. And that chain is really hard to break. So something to be aware of as you go along. Another important concept that's usually a little bit misunderstood is something called stimulus control. And I want to make sure that you understand that stimulus control is not controlling the stimulus. Okay? Two different things. Stimulus control has nothing to do with you being in control of anything. Okay? It is the stimulus itself that has control over our responding. Okay? So we can't have stimulus control. A stimulus can have control over responding. So an SD says that reinforcement is available. So when my alarm goes off, I get up, turn off the alarm. A little bit of negative reinforcement there. I don't have to listen to that alarm anymore. An S delta is basically your nope stimulus, is the best way to put it. So having this green light on and videoing this this video, that's an S delta for picking my nose. Or that's an S delta for using a cuss word, because that behavior will not be reinforced. Prompts are different than SDs. And I like to think of them as helper stimuli that establish stimulus control. So they're the things that draw the attention of the learner to the stimulus. They're the ones that help prompt the response, that type of thing. But they are not SDs. Prompts are helper variables that need to eventually go away, and that stimulus that's supposed to be the SD has control over responding. So there's lots of ways to do this. We can do time delay. We can do least to most prompting. We can do most to least prompting. Or we can just have a static prompt that we use at all times. And when you get to 623, we're going to be talking about prompt fading a little bit more. Motivating operations are different than SDs. They do not provide motivation. Reinforcement is not motivation. Motivating operations are not providing motivation. This is what they do. They make the contingency stronger or weaker. I think of them as kind of like the dimmer switch for the contingency. When the MO is strong, the contingency is bright. When the MO is weak, or it's an abolishing operation, if you will, then that contingency is dim. And what are some things that could function as MOs? Well, let's say you had a really hard workout and you know, your body's kind of fatigued. That's going to be an abolishing operation for running home. Whereas if you look out the window and it's sunny out and the temperature is a nice, you know, balmy 70 degrees, when it's time for your workout, which would be the SD, then you might be more likely to go outside for exercise rather than staying in. So that's what motivating operations do. They make that reinforcer either stronger or weaker. Generalization is another afterthought a lot of times. I found it's more reinforcing to program for acquisition than it is for generalization, although I did my dissertation on generalization. But generalization and maintenance are just as important. And the reason that I say that is because when I'm working with a client, a long-term client I would be working with for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, right? The average human lifespan is somewhere, I think, 80 to 85 years. So we are in our clients' lives for a very small percentage of it. And therefore, what we teach, if we're picking things to teach that are indeed important, need to generalize and they need to maintain. They need to be displayed outside the learning environment. I often tell my clients that it doesn't matter what they can do for me. It matters what they can do in the environments where they need to do it. So please do not just train and hope. Okay, that's a common error. You'll be responsible for generalization and maintenance, especially in 623, but we will review it again in 622. All right, so next week is going to be the last clarifying lecture because I usually don't do one in Module 8. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon.